1, verses 28 through 32. Romans chapter 1, 28 through 32. Steph, you want to read that for me, please?
28 through 32. And even if they did not retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them.
Okay, end of context, of course, chapter 1, Paul is showing the need of the Gentiles for the gospel of Christ. And in verse 28, the key thing is that they did not like to retain God in their knowledge. And the other passage we see back in Genesis, they didn't want to retain God in their knowledge. Their heart was evil continually. So it kind of goes focus, heart that devises wicked plans, right? Except, as I was reviewing for this class, this can happen to godly people too. Because the one I'm going to use, and we're not going to read it verse by verse, David. David devised wicked plans. If we would, we're not going to read it, but if we went to Samuel 7 and verse 6, or 2 Samuel chapter 11 and verse 6, chapter 11 and verse 6, speaking of David when he first saw Bathsheba, all the way to 2 Samuel 12, 13. Without reading the whole account, here's a person who was godly, who was identified as a man after God's own heart, right? But here, he's devised wicked plans. And the wicked plans was he had a relationship with Bathsheba, who was Uriah's wife. He tried to get Uriah to sleep with her. That didn't work because he was such a dedicated soldier. He put Uriah in the front lines for one specific purpose, and what was that?
Getting killed.
In fact, he informed Joab to kind of back away from him. So he got killed, and did he devise these wicked plans? Yeah. So I think what that tells me, you know, I almost didn't want to use David because there's so many good things we can learn about David, but God is no respecter of persons, so he does the good and the bad. There's some of the mercies of David that comes on us. But we have to be careful of that too, that we don't now, when what caused David to devise wicked plans? Huh? Well, time on his hand, his sin with Bathsheba. If he would, first of all, if he would have gone to the war like the kings did at that time, he wouldn't have been in that situation. Second of all, he looked upon a thing which in his heart, and then he fulfilled his lust in the heart. And of course, we know the rest of that story. The first child died. David was forgiven, but he was going to be a man of war. You look at his life. You talk about a life I wouldn't want. I wouldn't have wanted David's life. Because not only did he have internal problems, he had trouble with his children, Absalom. He had troubles on other troubles. But a lot of this was due to the effect of his choice. Now, the lesson I come for this, that though we look at this passage, and when I first studied this passage, I'm thinking, well, yeah, that talks about the idea of the devises wicked plans. Those are evil people. And evil people do devise wicked plans, do they not? But can godly people devise wicked plans to cover themselves? Now, they're not godly at that time. All of us would recognize that David was not godly when we look at this example in 2 Samuel. But the thing I want us to be aware is, instead of doing what's right to begin with, when we don't do what's right, do we devise plans to cover up instead of doing that which is right? And I think that's the lesson we have to be careful of. So I had that, this idea. So basically, I think it's talking society in general. They want nothing to do with God. They're going to do whatever they want. However, godly people can get caught up in the same thing. You and I can get caught up in the same thing. So now I'll open the floor to you. Any comments on that? Yes, go ahead.
I just said intentionally plotting harm or deceit, which goes against moral integrity.
Absolutely. And your definition, and again, I'm not trying, I hope I can live spiritually as good as David did most of his time, but your definition fits as to what he did. He lost his moral integrity when he did that. And we go into Psalms, David always remembered his sin as to what he had done. So the thing is this, avoid so that we don't get caught up in wickedness, so that we don't devise wicked plans. But when we see the word wicked, don't just dismiss it that it can't happen to you or that it can't happen to me, because it can happen to any one of us. We have to be careful of that. And that's why I chose to use David tonight. I was this way of saying, you know what, I'm going to just kind of skip over that unless someone brings it up. So I brought it up. Anybody else? Let's go on. Feet swift running evil. Feet swift and running evil. And I've got a couple illustrations here. You may agree or disagree with me, but I've got a couple of passages. Let's go to Isaiah 59. Isaiah 59, verses 7 and 8. Tammy, you want to read that one for me, please? Isaiah 59, 7 and 8. All right. Now, Linda, do you want to read tonight? Okay, I'd like you to read Romans 3, 15 through 18. Romans 3. And it's funny how similar Romans 3 is to what we've just read in Isaiah. In Romans 3, go ahead, Linda, 15 through 18. Now, here's what I come with my Chicago background. Feet swift and running evil. First thing came to my mind were the riots that we had in Chicagoland area. The riots and the plumage of them just going through these different stores, and it was ironic. The swift to running, that was within miles of our house when that happened. And you would see people, there'd be camera crews out there observing this. And people were coming with their trucks asking for help to put these stolen mattresses on their truck. You know, you think, I'm not making this up, that actually happened. And you had all this, and what happened is, you know, when you have things like that, people just fall into wickedness. You know, it was interesting, we had a brother in Christ when I was at Bridgeview. He had just become a full-fledged Chicago police officer when the Bulls won their first thing in basketball. And he happened to be downtown by the stadium to be crowd control. And he told me, Chuck, you couldn't believe it. He said what began with as a peaceful celebration turned chaotic. And breaking of windows, going into stores. Now remember, they just won the championship. They should be happy and act like human beings, but they go just the opposite way. And he said, and I have to admire him because he was an individual that didn't get fearful much. He said, I was actually afraid when that started because that was his first encounter with something like that. And I think what happens, and I've tried to stay away from anything like that, but I think when it's a mob mentality, perhaps you get, and I'm not justifying, it's not right, it's never right, but if it's a mob mentality, I think if you get involved in that, if you're not careful, you can get caught up in that too. Yes.
Agreed
husband and everybody else in the middle of it. And it was absolutely ridiculous. You have Christians that were encouraging that and agreeing with it, and it was just,
I agree with you. I'd be totally befuddled by that, but it's a situation where people tend to want to justify certain circumstances, and though you recognize, hey, this is stealing, this is evil, this is vandalism, but somehow in your puny brain or that person's puny brain, they're going to justify it because of some injustice they think either that corporation has done. I mean, I'm not getting into politics tonight, but the Teslas being put on fire. That's ridiculous. That car didn't vote for anybody. Did it? No. And again, I'm not going to go into politics, yay or nay, but it just, there are people who like to kind of run to do evil. They're swift to doing evil. They catch this. And what's really sad, they're often provoked to do it. We found out that some of the rioting in the area near us, outsiders came in and stimulated. Now, they got the locals to do it, but outsiders came in to stimulate that. God hates that. God hates that. Now, if, like you said, and I'm not aware of it, if it were a Christian who stuck that mattress on top of his roof and brought it home, I hope he would have enough remorse to either bring it back or pay for it and say, here's what I've done. Here's what I've done. It's kind of like when the parent takes the child in the store because the child stole his or her first candy bar. And what you make the child do is go back into the store and hand back the candy bar. You know, you're trying to show them this is a wrong thing, even though you could get away with it. Right? So again, we have this problem. Anybody want to comment on that? Feet running evil. We all know the next one, a false witness. That's one of the Ten Commandments. Let's go back to Exodus chapter 20 and verse 16. A false witness. In Exodus chapter 20 and verse 16, Martha, do you want to read that one for me? Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were there. I'll catch you the next time. All right, James, are you there, James?
Yeah.
Okay.
You should not bear false witness against your neighbor.
Okay, you should not bear false witness. I got to thinking about this idea of false witness, and I can't say this is 100%. But usually a false witness, they're to cover themselves or someone else, even though they know what is right. And I'm going to give you two illustrations of that. In the New Testament, the best illustration would be Jesus. Let's go to Mark chapter 14. Bob, I want you to read this for me. You're going to read two sections. Mark 14, 55 through 59. Yes, sir.
Now the chief priests and all the council sought testimony against Jesus to put him to death, but none found. For many bore false witness against him, but their testimonies did not agree. Then some rose up and bore false witness against him, saying, "We heard him say, 'I will destroy this temple made with hands, and within 3 days I will build another made without hands.' But not even then did their testimony agree."
And also read Mark 15:10.
15:10.
That's why I don't read the paragraph Bible.
10. For he knew that the chief priests had handed him over because of envy.
Okay, so what I tied those two together. Did they set false witnesses towards Jesus?
Yes.
They misconstrued what he said. Reason behind it? They're jealous of him. They want to get rid of him. A lot of times false witnesses are envious of the one they're being a false. Now, I'm not saying that's 100% of the time. But a lot of time, that's it, is it not? Why would you give a false witness? You tell the truth. And then you have no problem, right? Oh, by the way, God hates false witnesses. So you may think you got away with it, but you didn't.
And the truth is always easy to remember.
And the truth is, yeah, because it's the truth. You don't have to guess what you said the previous time. If it was right the first time, it's going to be right the second time, the third time, the fourth time. Also, along with Jesus, I have the case of Stephen. Let's go to Acts chapter 6. Acts chapter 6. Clay, you want to read that for me, please? Acts 6, 10 through 14. Okay, go back to verse 10. All of this is because of verse 10. I want you to make a little notation on verse 10. Read verse 10 again. So they had to get rid of him. Instead of just responding favorably to what he's speaking, they got rid of him. Remember, Stephen's the very same one in chapter 7. You stiff-necked and uncircumcised in hearts and ears. So again, he's teaching them the truth. They didn't want the truth. In fact, it bothered them so much they had to get false witnesses against him so that they could put him to death. So again, I don't think we have a problem that you're a false witness, but there are a lot of false witnesses out there today, including those who go to court and lie on the stand. You know, you'd like to say people are going to tell the truth, but I don't care if you put your hand on 10 Bibles. That's not going to be a truth serum to make you tell the truth. If they want to lie, they're going to do what? They're going to lie. And if they not get caught, they'll get caught by God. God knows what they've done. Sometimes, this is the worst case, a false witness or false witnesses today, 2025, will put someone in prison. How sad that is. Now, again, I think a lot of the prisoners that are in our jails deserve to be there because they've done wrong things. But I'm not naive enough to think that there are some there that you had some kind of attitude or false witness against them, and they're there unjustly. And I am amazed when I read of men who've been in prison 10, 12, 15 years, and finally it's been shown that they were on the seemingly good disposition they had. I ask myself, man, if that would have been done to me, how would I have been after I, you know, had that experience? And then I think of Joseph. Joseph, his brothers weren't kind to him. They were false towards him, were they not? And yet he was the one that ended up providing for them during the time of hardships.
And so was Potiphar's wife against him.
Yeah, so was Potiphar's wife, because she accused, I didn't even think of that one. She accused him of doing something he didn't even come close to doing. And he had told her. So again, and then here's the last one. Now, these are seven things God hates. Now, that doesn't mean God doesn't hate other things. But if he hates these things, I don't want to be in that list of that category. And that is one who sows discord amongst the brethren. Now, the first illustration I have on that one is the 12 spies. If the 10 would have agreed with the 2, they would have gone into what? Canaan. We wouldn't have had the events of the 40 years in the wilderness. We wouldn't have had the events of all those dying in the wilderness. But people will be people. The 10 didn't look at it from God's perspective. And again, what I want to call your attention to, these were people who have already seen miracles of God happening. So it's not as if they've never seen a miracle of God being done. But nevertheless, because didn't they go through the Red Sea? Okay, that'd be a miracle, wouldn't it? To walk through a dry... And could you imagine the faith it would take to walk through that and you see a wall of water, who knows how high, and it's not coming down on you? And you know, people who want to discredit the Bible say, well, it really wasn't that high. Well, it must have been, because when the enemies came, they all drowned. So we're not dealing with 6 inches of water here. But they experienced that. They experienced God speaking from the mountain, that they didn't want to hear him talk to us through Moses. So these are the people who have experienced things from him. And when God sent the 12 spies out, I want to emphasize this. He didn't send them out to see whether or not they could take the land. He already said, I've given you the land. I have given you the land. They were just to go see what bountiful land they were going to have. Instead of the bountiful land, the 10 of them focused on who?
The inhabitants.
The inhabitants of the land. We can't do it. Well, no, you can't do it, but who could? God could. But they successfully convinced the 601,000 men and others not to do it. In fact, if you read the whole account, they wanted to put to death Joshua and Caleb, but that was stopped. So again, they wanted to just get rid of those two objectors. And those are the only two, by the way, 20 and above, that got to go into the land. But here's the case. Did they sow discord? Let's go to another case of sowing discord. Let's go on another example. James chapter 3, 14 through 16. James chapter 3, 14 through 16. All right. Paul, are you there? No? Okay. Yeah, Tabitha. You didn't look up, but he pointed to you, so... So, James 3, 14 through 16.
But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic.
Okay.
Envy and self-seeking exist. Confusion and every evil thing are there.
There you go. Now, talking about brethren, we're talking about brethren who are part of the church now, are we not, in the New Testament? Why in the world would we want to sow discord?
Ego.
Jealousy. Selfishness. You see, these are still traits that don't automatically wash away when you're baptized. These are things we have to be careful of. You know, and I don't do it anymore, but when I used to talk to some younger preachers, I told them two things. Always keep on studying and be yourself. They might like some specific preachers and their styles. No, you develop your own style. It's nice to like the preacher, but God doesn't have a top 10 of preachers. I know we might, but God doesn't. You do your best. And what happens sometimes, and it's not just preachers, it's brethren, we get jealous of one another. Someone gets a new car and they think they don't deserve it. They get jealous of that. And so therefore they kind of throw some, well, you know, if he was really a wise steward of God's money, he wouldn't be spending his money like that. Well, it's none of your business. You don't know what, first of all, he's given in the contribution, correct? You don't know other good works he might be doing privately. Maybe he's very quiet about all the things he does. So if he wants to come in with a Lamborghini, not Cadillac, forget the Cadillac. Cadillac, second citizen's car to this next one I'm talking, Lamborghini. He drives in the parking lot in his Lamborghini. Wow, I don't understand how a Christian could have that. See, yeah, getting a little jealous? Tell me what kind of car a Christian can have. You get my point?
Pinto.
A what?
Pinto.
I had a Pinto. But it was much better than the Vega. But again, we have got to be careful. We cause discord because we get our feelings hurt. Have you ever? Raise your hand if you've ever gotten your feelings hurt. Good. And those of you that didn't raise your hand, shame on you, because you're not telling the truth. All of us, intentionally or not intentionally, most of the time it's not intentional. you get your feelings hurt. And some brethren take that in their mind as fighting words. Since that person disrespected me, and perhaps they did. Perhaps they didn't even know they did. You know, if it really bothers you that much, go to that person. Maybe they don't know that they disrespected you. Perhaps they did know that they did. Then you pray for them. You have to feel sorry for them. Because anytime somebody wants to bring somebody else down, you know what that tells me about the one who's bringing them down? He's insecure. If I've got to bring somebody else down to elevate myself, I'm insecure. So we got, maybe we have discord because we don't agree on a point. Now, we're not talking about what we do collectively. We have no choice in that. We go book, chapter, and verse collectively. That's the bottom line. But there are some areas of differences. My brother doesn't become my enemy because they don't agree with me on some issues. For instance, and I'm not saying that because we have three police officers that I know in this building. I'm all for the police. I'm all for the military. I have some very good sound brethren who do not think a Christian could be in the military. And they frown on the idea that they would want to choose to be a police officer. I respect them. They have a right to their own position. I don't agree with that position, but they have a right to their position. But I'm not going to cause discord because we have a difference on that. Because guess what? My wife and I have some differences, not many. She's come around to what I've... No, I'm just going to... We still have some differences. But it's not a doctrinal what we do collectively. It's a personal conviction on certain things. So I'm not going to cause discord. And that's how discord comes. Well, if you're not going to agree with me, I'm going to just stomp you out. I'm going to make you look silly. I'm going to make it be that you have no respect. No, you shouldn't be like that. Shouldn't be like that. If that's the case, we're going to just, well, we'll do like the Corinthians. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 12, 19 and 20. Fortunately, we don't have this here. At least I'm not aware of it. But it only takes one to start sowing discord. True? And being a preacher, and I've been a preacher since 1977, so you figure it out. And being a preacher, every preacher has a different style. Period. Every preacher goes about it in a different way. And it's funny, there can be some people who really like you, and then you get on their bad side, and they think you are the absolute worst preacher that ever lived. True story, years ago, had a man in the congregation. He told me, Chuck, you're one of the best teachers I've ever had. Well, thank you, that's a nice compliment. Less than 3 months later, he came up to me, he said, you're the most hateful individual I've ever met. I'm not making this up, this is true. And he caused friction. He caused friction in the congregation. Because every time I got up to speak, his motive was, what did Chuck say or do that was wrong? Well, if you're going to do my vocabulary, you're going to find a lot wrong. So he had a lot of words to do it. Doctrinally, I'd challenge him on anything he would bring up towards me. But he was causing discord amongst the brethren. Now, I've always told congregations, hey, if you don't think I'm doing a successful work, just let me know and we'll work things out and you can go get someone else. I don't want the discord being based upon the preacher. But sad but true, a lot of congregations, and it's not because they're teaching error. You know why many preachers have difficulty? Because people don't like their personalities. Now, if it's a doctrinal thing, then you've got to do something about it. Absolutely. But most of the time, it's a situation. So, again, that's preachers. But it's not just preachers. A lot of times, discord is not caused by the preacher. It can be caused by someone who sits in the pew all the time. Now, let's read that in Corinthians. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, 19 and 20. Martha, I think you got it this time. You looked up, so.
Again, do you think that we excuse ourselves to you? We speak your edification, for I fear lest when I come, I shall not find you such as I wish.
Okay, stop right there, Martha. She's going to read now. Now remember, as she begins reading this list, keep in your mind, he's talking to Christians. He's not talking to the ungodly who's following paganism. He's talking to the Christians at Corinth. Okay.
For I fear lest when I come, I shall not find you such as I wish, and that I shall be found by you such as you do not wish, lest there be contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, backbitings, whisperings, conceits, lest when I...
Well, you can go ahead and read the next one since you started.
Lest when I come again, my God will humble me among you, and I shall mourn for many who have sinned before and have not repented of the uncleanness, fornication, and lewdness which they have practiced.
Okay, looking at this list, raise your hand if you want to be a part of that congregation. Not I. You know, if they're looking for a preacher, I'll take a pass. I'll let Paul go back there and deal with it. I'll let Timothy go back there. I'll let Titus go back there. You got that many internal problems. Wow, you've got problems, don't you? You know what? There's going to be problems because we're human beings. But we shouldn't have the problems that cause discord. If we got problems, we work it out. We do what it says in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 3. Endeavoring to do what? Keep the unity of the Spirit. And then, of course, we've got the seven ones. We need to be like Philippians 1:27. Let's go there. Philippians chapter 1 and verse 27. Rebecca, you want to read that one for us, please? She's goofed me up. She normally sits on this side of the room, and she's out of place on that. But we'll forgive you, Rebecca. All right. One spirit, one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. Could we get on one another's nerves from time to time? Sure. But we're to have a love one towards another. Do our kids get on our nerves sometimes? Do our grandkids? Less, but sometimes. So, but you learn to deal with that and move forward. You don't try to create more problems. It's interesting because our littlest grandchild, he's enamored with Jake. In fact, when Jake's around, he's stuck to his side like a barnacle. And, you know, Jake, not now, not, and Jake's very nice to him, but, you know, but he don't get the hint, go do something else. He's there the whole time. And it just, but I know he loves him. I know he loves Jake and Jake loves him. Sometimes our brethren rub us the wrong way. But let's not use that to cause discord amongst the brethren. And when they keep on rubbing us the wrong way, maybe we got to look at ourselves. Or if it's something they're doing, maybe we go up to them and they're not aware that they're rubbing us the wrong way. Correct? So again, but the only time I can see need for discord is a doctrinal issue.